I'm just going to give a brief introduction to these poems because they're not written out the way poems usually are. I first discovered this group of poems in a book from 1930, published in Spain, which was itself a Spanish translation of an Arabic manuscript, which had been discovered by the author of these translations. And the manuscript was discovered in Cairo and was dated 1238. The poems in it are from approximately the 900s through the 1300s. So they're old poems, but they also are the poetry that the Western tradition pretty much springs out of. It springs out of it from the hearts of this group of people in Arabic Andalusia, into the hearts of the troubadours who themselves are exiled and go then up through the Sicilies and through Italy and begin to have a tremendous influence on Western poetry at a very early time. And one of the places that they landed was in the heart and mind of Dante. And his poetry is in some sense directly derivative from this, as was the poetry of the group of poets who were around him. So when I encountered these in the Spanish, I was very surprised to find out that I was suddenly writing poems that were in some kind of response to this. They weren't to these particular very old poems. They weren't imitations and they weren't translations. They were their own thing. And I call them poetry written in the presence of other poetry. And I think when Charles talks about after the last election, going back to Shakespeare and moving around in it and having things upspring in him, that there probably is not any poet that doesn't work in this way. Really and truly, that's how we work. Sometimes very directly and sometimes completely unknowingly, but it's there. We're part of an ecology. We're not single originating sources that have no other inlets into the spring. There are many, many inlets into that spring. I want to thank Charles, who published this book and has published many beautiful books. When I told a couple of people that he was going to be printing this particular book and designing it, everyone said, well, you'll have a very beautiful book. And I do. I have a very beautiful book. Thank you. I want to dedicate this reading to Benjamin Hollander, who died not very long ago, and who's also, I thank him in the book, one of the people very responsible for seeing that it got into print, because he was a big enthusiast about it. And he kept encouraging me, even when I had some disappointments about the way it was going to be printed by some other people in some other situations. He urged me to keep on with it and find the right way for it. And I don't know that it would have seen the light of day without him. So thank you, Benjamin. And he's in some other distance that we don't know quite how to reach him completely. But I did want to be able to thank him tonight. It seems just right that I would be reading from this particular book tonight with both Charles and Benjamin here. This particular manuscript that I was talking about was discovered by a man named Emilio Garcia Gomez, very well-known Arabist of the period of the early 20th century, which, believe it or not, is a long time ago. But my poetry arose up spontaneously. It turned out later, I found out from an historian of the period, Maria Menocal, that In fact, this was the way poems passed from person to person in the great cities of Arabic Andalusia, that people got together, poets got together, someone would read their poem, and very much as happens today in a situation in a jazz club, but when we're talking about flamenco dancing, someone will suddenly be touched by a very particular phrase, a note, an atmosphere. There are multiple things that they can be touched by. And if you were touched by something in the poem that the poet was reading, then you would allow it to grow and then bring forth your own poem there too. So somehow I got into that, and I'm not quite sure how, but I did, and I'm glad that I did. I don't know what else to say about these. There is, I think, as Steve told you, they're printed in the original Arabic, then they're printed in the Spanish translation in this book, then my translation, which I tried to keep very literal, comes, and then my poem, which arose. So I won't obviously be reading every one of those iterations for each of these poems. I'll just be reading my translation from the Spanish, and then my poem that did arise. There is one thing about these poems that I haven't talked a lot about before, but we're also dealing with the death of John Berger, wonderful writer and activist who long ago, now again, 50 or 60 years ago, was the first person to really begin talking about what the male perspective was in the art starting kind of pre-Renaissance, just pre-Renaissance in Europe. And a lot of the love tradition is written from that perspective. These poems of mine are not. So I just wanted to put that in here as another little piece of homage to someone who did some very wonderful work. The part I'm going to be reading from the book is the second half, which I've never read in public before. The poetry itself assumed the shape of a lunar cycle, so this will be the second half of the lunar cycle. Much to my surprise, that's what it is. It's somewhat darker than the first part. It's probably, I would say, more carnal. And it, in that way, really reiterates what we think of as that cycle and how it works. But I just want to point out that the moon ends in a very, very, very thin crescent on the left-hand side, and then as we view it from our earthly perspective, and within a day of darkness, it then reappears as a very, very thin crescent on the right-hand side of the moon. So that, I hope, comes through. I didn't put it in here on purpose. I only found it when I was reading through it today. So with that, I'll begin. And I am going to begin back before the 14th or 15th poem, just because it shows the scope of how this, the sense of this runs. So the first poem I'm going to read is actually number 12, and then I'll go on into the second half. And number 12 is a poem called in Spanish, Reclando en Espejo. Reglando, sorry, en espejo, and the gift of a mirror. This is my translation. I send you a beautiful mirror. Let your countenance appear on its far horizon, a moon of good omen. And can everyone hear me? Actually, I've never used one of these before, so you can hear me? Yeah, okay. I send you a beautiful mirror. Let your countenance appear on its far horizon, a moon of good omen. So you will justly appreciate your own beauty and pardon this passion that consumes me. Oh, despite its furtive being, your image is more accessible than you, more benevolent, and a better fulfiller of promises. And my poem. Thank you for your gift of a most beautiful mirror. I have looked, but I cannot see what you said you wanted me to see, the serene face of a most beautiful moon rising over its horizon. I see my own face weeping because I cannot give you what I do not own. And then plunging into the next section. There's a single poem. There are a few poems in here that are single that really just arose in response to the whole body of this work. You say you came to God through me, my beloved body, the ladder you climbed to heaven. Desert is earth without water, my body's bones, these grains of sand. Starting with number 15, La Tunica Roja, the red tunic. I called this poem Layla, and Layla is a very famous heroine in the Middle East whose lover died for not being able to see her, and perhaps she did too. That's one of the variations of the story. Famous song also, obviously. And it means darkness, Layla. Means darkness. She's the heroine. His name means darkness. So that the 1,001 nights are of Layla wa Layla, which means the 1,000 nights in one night. So this is Layla. Looking for you, I found you and stood before you, dressed in a crimson robe, my hands stained red with henna. You paused, drinking in the beauty of this image, and went on looking for me, my grief, thirst in the desert. Looking for you, I rose from the red dust of my tomb again and again. La Azucena, the lily. My translation, the hands of spring have built the castle walls of the lilies upon their stalks. Castles with parapets of silver, where the defenders cluster around the prince, hold swords of gold. What warrior so battle-hardened he would see this lily as a silver castle built by spring, within whose battlements the knights with golden swords erect protect their prince? Warrior, look, this is my silver cup overflowing at the lip where you might drink. These are not golden swords. They are my tongues whose words of longing pour unguarded into the spring air. The next poem is a famous poem, and it's a piece of a poem actually in Spanish called Despedida, the farewell, but it's originally was Arabic. When the farewell, this is the translation, when on the morning they left, we said farewell, full of sadness for the coming absence. I saw the backs of the camels, the palanquins they traveled in. They were as beautiful as moons, covered by golden veils. Beneath the veils, the scorpions of their tears crept over the roses of their fragrant cheeks. They are scorpions that do not injure the cheek which they mark. They sting the heart of the sad lover. And number 17, my poem. How do you know the heart of the moon? Perhaps there is one kind of time always restoring her bright face to perfect bloom, another eating her fragrant heart in grief. A standalone poem here. No man has desired me except for my compassion. I have no word to speak at death to open heaven. The next poem called A Garden. The garden of small green hills adorns itself for its admirers with the most beautiful colors, as if the dowry of a maiden were being displayed, shining with its necklaces of gold. Or bowls of musk mixed with the purest incense were being poured out there. The birds warble on the branches as if they were singers bending over their lutes. The water continues to let fall its streams like chains of gold and silver pearls. Chains of silver and pearls. They are splendors of a loveliness so perfect that they are like the beauty of certainty or the brilliance of faith. A response. I too love the greenness of the garden, but unlike you, in my love, I become as she is, dressing in perfumed colors like a bride, wearing her dowry as if it were brilliant gold, glittering as I bend over the lute whose sounds shine like drops of water falling into one by one into this song. Like her, my love is not consumed in the perfect certainty of the marriage room or in the radiant ascent to heaven. A poem called Mourning, M-O-U-R-I-N-G, Mourning in Al-Andalus, and Al-Andalus is, of course, the Arabic name for it. If white is the color of mourning clothes in Al-Andalus, it is a good thing. Don't you see me, who has dressed myself in the whiteness of my white hair, because I am in mourning for my youth? And I called this poem Alba, which is traditionally a song at dawn. In Al-Andalus, it is our custom to wear white in mourning, remembering the white dawn when lover was parted from her beloved. Your white hair, old poet, is not worn in mourning for your youth, but revelation of the secret of our brightening embrace. A poem called The Beauty at the Revelry. Her supple waist was a branch that swayed over the sand dunes of her hips, and from it my heart picked fruits of fire. The blonde hair, which showed at her temples, drew the letter Lam on the white page of her cheek like gold that flowed over silver. She was at the peak of her beauty, like a branch when it is clothed in leaves. The glass full of red nectar between her white fingers was like a twilight appearing over a dawn. The sun arose from the wine, and her mouth was the setting sun, and the hand of the cupbearer like the east, and while serving the wine, he spoke courtly words. And upon going down in the delicious sunset of her lips, the sun left a faint light upon her cheeks. My response, number 21. I am the dancer with willow waist swaying as I accept the cup of wine like the rising sun that sets in my mouth as I drink, lighting my cheeks at dusk with dawn. The poem ends here. I wanted to follow the sun through the gates of dark, journeying in the night to ignite one by one the fires at the root of my tongue, of my heart, of my belly, the place this poem begins. And then a little standalone poem, number 22. The young deer stands in an open field where the grass has dried up like the milk of her mother, gone with the first winds of sunrise to answer the scent of love again. something you can see in the country every year. Again, a very well-known poem. It's called Chastity. It may be a little offensive to some of you from the opposite side of the fence. I wanted to tell you, find myself wanting to tell you, that the word Satan is named in here. The Satans actually were a group of spirits that originally inhabited the deserts of the Middle East along with the jinns, and they were always up to various kinds of mischievous and sometimes destructive tricks, but like gremlins and other societies, they're well known for their quality of being able to be on both sides of the fence. So Satan grows out of these. This is a consolidation of these spirits, just as it was with our devil. Chastity. Although she was ready to surrender, I abstained from her and did not yield to the temptation Satan offered me. She appeared unveiled in the night, and the shadows of the night, illuminated by her face, raised their veils that moment. There is no glance of hers that could not make hearts turn. But I gave more strength to the divine precept, which condemns lust over the capricious and sudden starts of the horses of my passion, so that my instinct did not revolt against chastity. And so I passed the night with her like a little camel that a muzzle keeps from nursing. Such a one as she is an orchard, where for one like me there is no other benefit than sight and fragrance. I am not like those abandoned animals that take gardens for pastures. This is my poem. When I came to you unveiled in the evening, you turned to praise the ways you misunderstood my love, giving your own name to my desire. What I give does not deplete me. My virtue cannot be returned to me by you, as if I were your enemy and you refused to take my life. Would you halter a gazelle? Would you shroud the desert from spring rain? Walk with me in this garden. Graze with me in this green field. I have to find out how to arrange myself so I can have a drink here. The walnut. This is the translation. It is a covering formed at two pieces joined together so that it is beautiful to see. They look like eyelids when they are closed in sleep. If a knife splits it, you would say it is the pupil of an eye whose effort to see pushes it into a convex shape. And you could compare the inside to an ear because of its convolutions and crannies. I called my response eyelid. Cleave what was closed in sleep, reveal the waking sense, leave me to rise, to dress in the crimson petals scattered across the floor. For a couple of hundred years of early Arabic poetry, there was a form called an ode, and this is a kind of an example of that. It has a somewhat different feel to it. Petition for a falcon. O king, whose fathers were soaring birds of the highest rank, you who have adorned my neck with the necklace of your favors as large as pearls and threaded like pearls on a string, adorn now my hand with a falcon. Honor me with one with clean wings, whose feathers have been bent by the north wind. With what pride I will go out with it at dawn, matching my hand against the wind in order to capture the free with the enchained. This is my response, number 25. As the smallest bird of the air, I have died 10,000 times, pierced by the golden talons of those birds who are slaves of the king, my blood like rain in the dawn. I am your beloved, uninjured. I appear in the light of the morning and evening. My feathers grow out of the wind. If finally I come, you ask me to come to you, no one will envy you your prize. If I fly, I will not return at your command, but at my heart's. No blood will stain your glove. A fragment from another ode in Arabic called Qasida. Parted from one another, my body dried up with passion for you, and in exchange, my tears never ceased. Losing you, my days have changed and have turned black, while with you, even my nights were white. One might say that we never passed the night together without any mediator, except our own union, while our good star closed the eyes of our critics. We were two secrets in the heart of the darkness until the tongue of dawn was just on the point of denouncing us. My response, it tears at my heart and my eyes, remembering how we two lay as a single egg in the nest of the night, her heartbeat completely surrounding us, one star, our guardian. We were her secret until they shattered it and we parted into the light, delivered into the hands, into the eyes of the jealous world named by the tongue of time. A standalone poem here. What has been called sacred is the secret door into the shaded garden. If you love me, you must love what I am, a stone in the dusty road. La Luna. The moon is like a mirror whose quicksilver has been misted over by the sighs of young girls, and the night is clothed with the light of her lamp, like the black ink is clothed by the white paper. And my response, look how my illusions illuminate my night. And then as the moon begins to reappear, where object touches mirror, image disappears. Thank you.